Notice, these stories include violent acts and mature language. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Dr. Marvin Dunn, and this is The Storyteller with my brother, Dr. Raymond Dunn. The topic today, policing early Miami.
Thanks, bro, for the introduction. Now, let's just jump right into it. Bro, where did the first police officers for the city of Miami come from?
Well, they were all white.
Okay.
And most of them came from Georgia. Most of them came from rural Georgia. The city of Miami hired these men, put them in Color Town and Coconut Grove with a billy club, a badge, and a gun, and told them to enforce the law. So those first officers were not trained, simply brought in from rural Georgia.
Tell me again.
And there were problems, Ray, from the very beginning.
Like what?
The first problem was that they were not trained.
Mm-hmm.
The second problem was that they were racist. The third problem was that there were no limits on what they could do, particularly to black people. And so policing in early Miami basically meant keeping black people in check. And that's what the police did. Other than keeping them in check in terms of behavior, the police also had the role of making sure black men showed up at work on Monday mornings. So if you got arrested for drunk behavior or something during the course of the weekend, your boss man expected the police to release you to be available to work on Monday. So the police were a part of the employment intimidation to manage blacks, using employment as a way of managing black people's work and using the police to be an instrument of the business community.
Okay. But I heard of this place, Hardeeville. What was that?
Hardeeville was Miami's vice area. It was where white men went to do dirty.
Mm-hmm.
It was where white men went to gamble. It was where they went for prostitutes in particular. It was where they went for liquor during the Prohibition period. It was a part of Colored Town. It was 20th Street, Northwest 20th Street. That has always been, Colored Town has always been the place where white men go to do dirt. It's where they went for prostitutes. It's where they went for illegal liquor. It's where they went to gamble. It's where they went to break the law out of sight of white women. So Hardeeville was that area along 20th Street, named after Sheriff Dan Hardy, because Dan Hardy had the job of trying to clean it up.
Oh. Okay.
The reason Hardy was under pressure to clean up Hardeeville was because of white women in Miami, because their husbands were going to Colored Town, Hardeeville, getting prostitutes, picking up venereal diseases, and then bringing that back to their wives.
So, Brooke, what was this 1928 grand jury report that I hear about? Did that have anything to do with Hardeeville?
It had to do with how the Miami Police Department was policing blacks at that time. It was a grand jury report that came out that absolutely castigated the police department for illegal, violent, unconstitutional behavior against blacks. What had happened, Ray, was that the Miami Police Department, again, all white officers. There were no black officers in Miami until the 1940s. But these people had unlimited authority, particularly over blacks. And the Miami Police Department had essentially a homemade electric chair that they put together and had it in the basement of the police department.
No, wait, was that legal? Was that legal?
No, of course it wasn't legal. It was so outrageous that even the Miami Herald and the white community was outraged by it when they found out about it. But the point is, the Miami Police Department had this device that they would make people sit in for questioning. And most of the folks who sat in that chair were black people. Mind you, about 90-95% of the folks who were jailed during that time were blacks. So if you got arrested, chances are you were a black person in Miami. So these people were put in this chair. Electrodes were connected to various parts of their bodies. And then you were questioned. And if you didn't respond as the police wished you to respond, then they would jock you. So once that became public, it led to that 1928 grand jury report and other things that had happened up to that time led to this scathing report about the abuses of the Miami Police Department. So it was a very, very spurious, evil device that once it became public that this was happening, even the Miami Herald was outraged. And we're talking now early to mid-1920s.
Okay, but let's take a step beyond the police. Let's go to the courts. Were the courts aware of this and still allow that kind of evidence?
That was the reason for the 1928 grand jury report.
Oh, that was the reason. Okay.
Exactly. That was a way of informing the court that this was going on. So the grand jury, getting back to what they published, was a scathing report of practices in the City of Miami Police Department affecting all citizens, black and white, but primarily blacks, because blacks were the primary people who were arrested at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, the grand jury called for the firing of the Miami Chief of Police, Leslie Quigg. They felt that he was unfit for office in large measure because he allowed his officers to take such extremes with the citizens.
And so they got rid of the police chief and the Miami.
Well, I didn't department. Say they got, I didn't say they got rid of Quigg. Leslie Quigg actually got tried for murder of a black man.
Right.
In part because of the kinds of abuses that were going on in the department. That was the Kyra case, which we need to talk about.
Well, I know that Quigg served two terms as police chief.
That's right.
Now, are we talking about after the first term, this happened?
This was during the first term.
I've heard so much about Sheriff Quigg, but one of the things I connect them with is this Kyra case. What happened with that?
Oh, that was a very important case in Miami. In fact, the Miami police chief got tried for murder, first-degree murder in this case. This began on July 16th, 1925.
Mm-hmm.
On that day, the Miami Police Department reported finding a dead man, Kyra, whose first name we don't know,
mm-hmm.
on 7th Avenue in Collardtown. At the same evening, the Miami Police reported that two officers were involved in a chase at Dorsey Park, and one of the officers had gotten shot in the abdomen, and he was taken to Jackson Hospital. So the search for the killer of this black man and for whoever might have shot this officer, I think his name was Nasworth, mm-hmm. Sort of went cold. Nothing happened. Until some years later, actually over a year later, one of the officers turned himself in. These are white officers now.
All right.
And he reported that evening when this body was found in Overtown and that this officer was shot, that actually the police were involved. And what had happened, bro, was that Kyra worked at the El Commodore Hotel downtown Miami. It was a bellhop.
Mm-hmm.
And the police were called to the hotel because a white woman called the police to complain that Kyra had approached her daughter to tell her daughter that there was a man who wanted to meet her, presumably a white man. And this woman was outraged and called the police and insisted that Kyra be arrested. So the police came, an officer named Pierce shows up to arrest Kyra. And the manager of the Commodore Hotel is heard telling the police, "Don't kill him here," unquote. So they took Kyra to the police department, and Chief Quigg instructed the officers to take Kyra to the city limits, 20th Street, and teach him a lesson and send him on his way. Well, what happened was that these officers, on the way to the city limits, stopped. One of them got out, pulled Kyra from the car, had him on the ground, and they shot him dead. And that's the body they found on 7th Avenue that night. In the course of struggling with Kyra, the officer's gun went off, and that's how this guy got shot in the abdomen, the white officer.
Oh, okay.
But they tried to cover it up and say that there was no connection between these two incidents. So there was no reason to think that they were connected until one of them confessed months later that the dead man that was found on 7th Avenue, Kyra, had been in the car with them. And that led to the investigation of Quigg and who had instructed these officers to take Kyra out and teach him a lesson. And eventually, Quigg was arrested. So were two of the officers. Quigg, in fact, was charged with first-degree murder. The others had other lesser charges. But now you had, in 1925, the chief of police, a white man in Miami, on trial for first-degree murder, and two white officers as well. It was a sensational case in Miami. The end result was that it was a parody of justice. White people in court laughed at what Kyra had done, and one prospective juror said he would have treated Kyra worse than the police officer who arrested him treated him. So, and people were friends of Quigg. So it was really a joke of a trial. So, of course, the officers were all acquitted. And after a period of being out of office, Quigg was reelected. So that was the Kyra case.
And that's our history here in Miami, that we would have something like that to happen in the city of Miami.
Well, in a sense, it's the George Floyd case, except, you know, over a century earlier. The same sort of thing happened in that case.
I don't know. Bro, you have so many of these cases, I'm telling you. Miami's history is, it's interesting, but as an observer, it's oftentimes disappointing to know that this existed in our community. I hate to keep asking you about cases because, you know, I mean, some of them are really, really hard to take in. But I understand that there was a Spelman case.
Oh, the little Spelman Kemp.
Oh, right. Now, get me straight on that because, you know, I get my stories all mixed up. What happened?
Around the same period of time, Spelman Kemp, I think he was 14, and another little boy were caught by a white Miami police officer. They were stealing eggs out of a boxcar that was parked in the railroad track. And this officer warned them that the boys ran. Once the cops spotted them, they ran. And the officer shot Spelman Kemp in the back. The boy fell on the ground. Now, this is from a white witness who was present. Once Spelman Kemp was on the ground, the officer walked up to him and said to him, "What'd you run for? Didn't you know I'd get you? I got a good mind to finish you off right now." And this little boy was still alive and heard this being said to him, according to this witness. And the officer was never charged, no consequence of killing this little boy for stealing eggs.
Bro, that is a sad case.
Again, the problem was, Raymond, that there were no checks on the police, and the police were not trained. And many of them were racist. I think it's a fair accusation to make that the men who were hired, mainly coming in from Georgia and other rural areas of Florida, were brought in to do just what they did.
Okay.
Beat down the black population, keep it in check, be an instrument of employees to make sure that black people were on their jobs. So, of course, in that kind of an environment where you have no limits on the police, this kind of thing can happen.
Well, obviously, it was a difficult time for the black community. Let's take a look at brighter days and let's see if it made any difference. When was the first black police officer hired, and what effect did that have?
Well, there had been advocates for black police officers in Miami for years before we got the first ones hired. The first officers who were black who were hired were actually patrolmen rather than officers, and they were hired in 1944. And they were limited to policing Colored Town and Coconut Grove. And they couldn't arrest white people. They were eventually elevated to the status of police officers, but they could not arrest white people until the 1950s before a black cop in Miami could arrest a white person.
I heard some of those stories from people you and I both know. Assistant Chief Anderson, he told me, Ray, back in the day, if we went to a scene, just say a bar, involving a fight or some kind of something between a black and a white, he said that the black officer couldn't arrest a white man. The black officer had to call the police department and wait for a white policeman to come and arrest a white person.
Right. Into the 1950s, this was happening. And when they hired the first ones, they had to do it in secret. They were sworn in the basement of the police department. But white folks were afraid of the idea of a black man having a gun legally walking the streets of Miami. They were very, very fearful of that. I think another hesitation that whites had was the very fact that eventually there was going to be a confrontation between white lawbreakers and the police, the black police officers, and the difficulty that that was going to present for law enforcement. The hiring of the first black police officers came late in the city's, you know, almost 50 years after the city was established, and with a lot of resentment from whites. You know, once we did have black police officers,
things changed, I bet.
Well, they did change. Mm-hmm. But one of the things in the Miami Police Department that did not change was the use of black police officers on motorcycles.
You know Dr. Robert Ingram, right?
I was going right there.
No, you're going right there. Yeah. Bob and I had that conversation so many times. So.
Well, I'll tell you what I know about that.
Okay,
you can share what you know about it. But the chief of police, once forced to hire black officers, said, well, one part of the department that will not become a checkerboard, the motorcycle patrol,
yeah.
And so they did hire black police officers, but nobody got on a motorcycle who was black until Athalie Range was elected to the Miami City Commission. She was the first black and the only black on the Miami City Commission. The city wanted to establish Alice Wainwright Park, a city park in Coconut Grove, and the four white commissioners were divided two by two. And Mrs. Range said, I'll vote for the park, but I have something I want in return. And she told me this.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put a black man on a motorcycle in the police department, and I'll give you my vote for that park. And that's exactly what happened. And that's how Bob Ingram, mm-hmm. you can pick it up from there, yeah. became the first black officer in Miami who had a motorcycle.
Mayor Ingram, Bob was also mayor of the city of Opa-locka. Mayor Ingram told me that that was the most elite organization in the police department, the motorcycle patrol. He said to break that barrier, and he was the first black police motorcycleman hired because of Atherley Range. He was very proud of that.
You know, fast forward, though, on the problem of policing early Miami. One of the problems was that whites used Charlottetown as a cesspool for sin. That hasn't changed all that much. You know, they use Overtown for vice then and now. If you look at who goes to Overtown even now to buy drugs, who's going in to find women, mm-hmm. a lot of these buyers are coming in from Miami Beach, from Coconut Grove, from Coral Gables. So Overtown, Colortown still remains the place where a lot of illegal activity takes place. So the policing in those areas are going right. to be much more stringent. A big part of the problem, though, was that the police were often paid off. They were often a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, take selling numbers, Belita. The cops were in on that. During Prohibition, when liquor was illegal, the cops were in on who could sell liquor. People saw corruption yeah. within the police department, and that sort of added to a decrease in respecting the police to begin with.
But I would like to think that things really changed when Clarence Dixon became the first chief of police.
First black.
First black. Now, I remember Clarence Dixon because of his hats.
And one of those cowboy hats.
That was big news. But Marvin, he was a pretty darn good police chief, I think.
Well, he was. I first had contact with him on a professional level the day the 1980 riot happened, May 1980. Clarence Dixon was a major at that time in the Miami Police Department, and he was in charge of the state troopers who were massing at a police substation in Liberty City. And I went up there to see him because I'd seen what was happening on 62nd Street as that riot was kicking off. And Clarence told me, Dr. Dillon, we can't go up there yet. We're not ready. Now, this was in the afternoon. I was probably talking to him around 6 to 7 o'clock at night. First bodies up in Liberty City were found. But he told me, we can't. We're not organized. We're not ready. So he would not let those state troopers go into Liberty City until well after midnight when they had a lot of people on board who could manage to take care of that situation.
Okay, bro, so who were the first black officers hired?
They were John Millage, Ralph White, Clyde Lee, Ed Kimball, and Moody Hall. Those were the first black police officers in Miami appointed really as patrolmen in 1944.
I've heard that name Millage before. Who was he?
John Millage was the first black officer to die in the line of duty. Yeah, he this was a major, major story. You know, before we proceed, let's take a moment to recognize Miami had a black judge during this time. And Miami had a black police precinct during this time. Judge L.E. Thomas was the first black judge to be appointed in the South since Reconstruction. And he was in charge of the black police precinct in Colortown. So if you got arrested after they have that precinct built in Colortown, then that's where you went and Judge Thomas heard your case. Before that, the black folks were taken down to the main jail with the white folks. But because 90% plus of the folks who were arrested were black, your own precinct up in Colortown. And that black officers were used to bring people into that precinct, which okay. incidentally, Ray, has been reopened as a museum.
So, bro, what were some of the biggest mistakes made in early Miami policing, and what can be done about it now?
Well, nothing can be done about it now except to try to improve upon some of the mistakes that were made back then, which included not hiring black people to be police officers. That was the biggest mistake to begin with. Well, some of the things that followed naturally from denying blacks the opportunity to be police officers was that violence became the trademark of the police department. the use of police abuse of power against blacks became institutionalized because of the way in which policing was done. Now, what are the lessons that we've learned over the years? One is that you must have limits on police authority in a community, particularly if the officers who are patrolling that community are of a different ethnicity or a different race. The police have to have some training and sensitivity to the fact that people that they're policing may not be ethnically or culturally the same as they, and therefore their behaviors may be different. So we got to get to the point where we have police officers trained and sensitive to policing in communities that are unlike their own.
Thanks, bro, for telling this story. I found it interesting. I learned something new, and I'm sure that our audience did too.
I sure hope so, Ray. That's why we do these stories. We want folks to take the information and use it to understand what's going on around them today.
Exactly. We thank you for listening to The Storyteller, a production of MR2D Media. This and other stories are available at donehistory.com, through Black Eyes Unfiltered podcast, or in print, Black Miami in the 20th Century by Dr. Marvin Dunn.